This is the Iran Human Rights Podcast, a review of major human rights issues by the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran. The idea of being a refugee can evoke many different images in people's minds. Refugees from Iran are perhaps not what one may immediately think of as typical. To start with, there's a relatively wide range of reasons behind people's decision to flee, from religious persecution to the ongoing witch hunt for dissidents and political activists. What happens once they cross the border also varies quite a bit. While the luckier ones eventually get resettled and can start to rebuild their lives in another country, many end up in permanent limbo, or even have to go back to where they started. We wanted to get a clearer picture of what the Iranian refugee situation looks like today. On today's show, the campaign speaks with Faraz Senayi, the Iran researcher in the Middle East and North Africa division of Human Rights Watch. Over the past year, he's traveled to Iraqi Kurdistan and Turkey, where he met with Iranians who fled the country seeking safe haven. Let's start with the basics. Where do refugees from Iran go, and under what conditions are they fleeing the country?
The largest number of Iranian refugees that we know of are currently in Turkey. There are smaller numbers in other neighboring countries. I would say the second largest group of Iranian refugees is in Iraq, particularly in Iraqi Kurdistan. And those are really the two main countries that I visited both last year and also earlier this year. But a good number of individuals who have been under immediate threat from the government for either their religious beliefs or for their political beliefs, left essentially illegally. Some of them, for instance, had sentences handed down by revolutionary courts or other courts against them, and it was impossible for them to leave the country legally with a passport, either because their passport was confiscated or because they were afraid that when they left the country, they would be at the border, essentially, they would be apprehended by security forces. So they smuggled themselves out, paid someone in Iran or across the border to make arrangements for them to leave the country unlawfully or illegally. Now, for Turkey, you know, as an Iranian, you actually don't necessarily need a visa to go there. So for individuals who didn't have problems with the security forces, didn't have court sentences handed down against them, but still felt that they were they could no longer stay in the country because they were threatened or whatever the case may be, some of them were able to actually just travel legally with an Iranian passport, didn't require a visa, and they went to Turkey. And once they arrived in Turkey, they went and introduced themselves to the UNHCR, which is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees Office, and introduced themselves essentially as refugees seeking asylum in a third country. For Iraq, it's the same. A large number of individuals smuggled themselves out, and once they arrived in Iraqi Kurdistan, they went and introduced themselves to the UNHCR office in Suleymaniye or in Erbil. And there were others who essentially left lawfully, and once they got into Iraqi Kurdistan, went in and presented themselves as refugees to the UNHCR offices.
What are some of the most common reasons for becoming a refugee?
A lot of the individuals with whom I met in Turkey and also in Iraqi Kurdistan left because they were civil society activists, particularly human rights activists. Or they were opposition members, political opposition members. Some of them were journalists. We've got a large number of journalists who've left since the 2009 presidential elections. And because essentially the government launched a huge crackdown, a security crackdown against any form of opposition, including peaceful protesters after the 2009 elections. And we saw kind of a new wave of individuals leaving the country as refugees. So most of the individuals I met in both Turkey and Iraqi Kurdistan, or I should say many of them, had left after the 2009 election. Now, there were also other individuals who left for other reasons having nothing to do with the crackdown that came after the 2009 election. For instance, I met quite a lot of religious refugees or individuals who, for instance, were Christian converts or who were Baha'is. I also met a lot of individuals who were part of the LGBT community, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community. Quite a few of them actually are in Turkey and are awaiting resettlement to either European countries, the United States, Canada, and Australia. Those are the main countries that Iranians are going to and have gone to for the last several years.
Can you talk about what life is like for these refugees once they arrive in neighboring countries?
The situation of refugees is very difficult, both in Iraqi Kurdistan and in Turkey, primarily because they go there and they don't usually have lots of money with them. Sometimes they are supported by family members back home in Iran, but oftentimes they are not. And they leave without having planned to leave, you know, because the pressures on them reach a level that they can no longer, stay in the country. And so oftentimes they're not planning on leaving the country and they have to leave very, very fast, very hurriedly. To either Turkey or Iraqi Kurdistan, and as a result, don't have a lot of belongings that they can take with them. So once they arrive there and introduce themselves to the UNHCR offices, there are, you know, various restrictions regarding their ability to be able to travel, you know, freedom of movement within Turkey or Iraqi Kurdistan. For instance, in Turkey, they have to they are essentially not allowed to live in the largest cities. Generally, Turkey has a policy of scattering refugees to smaller towns in the hinterland, so to speak. So they're not allowed to be in Ankara or in Istanbul. As a matter of general policy, there are some exceptions to this. And so they go to these small towns. They have to essentially sign into the security forces or the police office on either a daily or weekly basis. They have to inform and get permission from the authorities every time they want to travel outside the city. They are essentially not allowed to work while they are there. And for individuals who wind up staying in Turkey or in Iraqi Kurdistan for a long time, this is an untenable situation. At some point, they have to work. And so oftentimes, they are essentially forced to work underground or in the black market, which, of course, opens them to lots of abuses by Turkish employers or by Iraqi Kurdish employers in Iraqi Kurdistan. So essentially, they live in difficult situations, and all the individuals with whom we met are really just looking to get out of their refugee situation in these countries and be transferred to a third country, to a resettlement country.
How easy or not is it to actually get resettled?
It really depends on your case. If you have what the UNHCR office and the staff consider to be a strong case and a believable case, then you are essentially recognized. You know, it's a multi-step process. You first have to be recognized as a refugee based on the criteria of the UNHCR convention. So essentially, the UNHCR office has to believe that you are persecuted based on your political opinion, your membership in a social group, your religious beliefs, or a set of other criteria, and that if you return back to your home country, in this case Iran, you're under immediate threat, or there's a high likelihood that you will be arrested, detained, and/or tortured. So if they don't believe this, then you will not be recognized as a refugee, and there are kind of appeals processes that you have to go through in order to appeal your case, and you get a second chance. And if you are, again, not recognized as a refugee, either in the UNHCR offices in Iraq or in Turkey or anywhere else in the world for that matter, you essentially are under threat of being deported back to your home country. Once you are recognized as a refugee, then there's a long process that awaits you in terms of resettlement. Now, as a refugee, you have the right to not be returned, to not be forcibly returned to Iran. But you do not have a right as a refugee to resettlement in a third country. And this is one of the biggest problems and one of the things that a lot of individuals who flee Iran actually don't understand. They believe that once they're recognized as a refugee, they have a right to be resettled and that the resettlement will happen relatively quickly. That's not the case. Essentially, UNHCR recognizes you as a refugee, and then UNHCR and the refugee are completely dependent on a third country to accept them. And it's that part of the process that often takes a very, very long time.
How does the case of Iranian Kurds differ? A lot of them end up in Iraqi Kurdistan. What happens to them there?
There's this belief by UNHCR offices that essentially if you're a Kurd, if you're an Iranian Kurd and you go to Iraqi Kurdistan, you know, that area is now governed by the Kurdish regional government. And it has semi-autonomous and semi-independent status within Iraq. And it's not an area that is under threat. You know, it's relatively peaceful and relatively stable. So unfortunately, many of these Iranian Kurdish refugees who go to Iraqi Kurdistan are not prioritized for resettlement at all. And as a durable solution, this is the term that the UNHCR offices use, you know, a durable solution is either to resettle them in the country that they go to seek resettlement. So in this case, it would be Iraqi Kurdistan, or to resettle them to a third country, or to send them back if circumstances change in Iran, which doesn't seem to be the case anytime soon. So for a lot of Iranian Kurds in Iraqi Kurdistan, the UNHCR offices essentially just say, why don't you guys just stay there? We it's not a priority for us to resettle you to Europe or to the United States or to Canada. And in fact, many of these countries are not taking Middle Easterners and especially Kurds for resettlement anyway. So they wind up getting stuck there. And as you mentioned, their dream really is to be resettled to a third country outside of the region. And so they have a dilemma, essentially. Do they continue to stay there? Do they try to go back to Iran? Or do they try to smuggle themselves into the European Union and apply for asylum in those countries? And smuggling is an extremely dangerous option, but it's an option that a lot of individuals who are essentially have reached the end of the line, either because they have not been recognized as refugees or because they've been recognized as refugees and, you know, there's no chance that they're going to be resettled in Europe or anywhere else outside the region. They essentially decide to take the risk of smuggling themselves into Greece, which is a European Union nation, and then maybe going further up into other European Union nations and applying for asylum status. Now, if you are caught trying to enter Greece or other EU countries, you can be deported back to Iran. This is a very, very dangerous risk that many of these individuals have taken, and some have done it and have reached European Union countries and they've applied for asylum. Others have not been able to do so.
Thank you, Faraz. To learn more about Iranian refugees and for more on Human Rights Watch's work around the world, you can go to hrw.org. That's all for this edition. For more news about human rights issues in Iran, visit our website at iranhumanrights.org. Join us next time for the Weekly Rights Podcast. Thanks for listening.